Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service of the tele-award-winning Close Up Television Radio. Jim Masters here. Pleasure to have you with us today. Also a pleasure to welcome Dr. Alessandra Wall to our show. She is a noted executive coach and founder and CEO of Noteworthy, whose mission is to advance equality for women. She works directly with high-achieving women in STEM and finance and the companies that rely on these women to help them advance their careers and thrive in and out of work. She says her sole focus as an executive coach is to help ambitious, smart-driven women achieve their highest potential and leadership all the way up to the C-suite. She encourages her clients to step into and own their leadership, whether at work, in their community, or at home, by providing the tools and support they need to operate strategically without feeling undermined, overlooked, or having to sacrifice their health, families, and relationships. According to Dr. Wall, there are three categories of executive women who seek noteworthy coaching. The first two categories are women who are looking for role promotions and raises. One group feels stuck and stagnant and has external opportunities. That's what they're seeking. And the others, well, they're satisfied with their organizations, hoping to position themselves for internal growth. The third category comprised of women in leadership who are exactly where they belong in their careers. And the final group is seeking more traditional executive coaching to show up more effectively and powerfully as leaders. Her mission is to help as many women as possible live and succeed on their dreams so they can build a legacy they're proud of. The website is noteworthyinc, that's I-N-C, .co. Noteworthyinc, I-N-C, .co. We'll mention that again during the course of the show. But coming to us direct from beautiful San Diego, California, this is part one of an exclusive Close Up Radio two-part series. We welcome Dr. Alessandra Wall. Dr. Wall, thank you very much for joining us here on Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. Welcome.
I'm very happy to be able to spend this hour with you, Jim.
It's so exciting. It's going to go by, it's a half hour. It's going to go by really fast, even faster than you think. And then the next week is a half hour as well. So we've got a lot to get to and a lot of incredible things to chat about. I first would love to know, I love to sort of break things out for our viewers in terms of what inspires our guests to do the work that they do. You know, in your own life's journey, the things that you've experienced in your life, what pointed you in the direction of wanting to become first a coach and then really emphasizing executive coach? You've got this wonderful psychology background prior that I think enhances the situation as well, because the understanding of the human condition and relationships and how people sort of operate and think. Tell us about some of your inspirations that pointed you in the direction of being a coach and specifically an executive coach.
Sure. Well, as you point out, I started my career as a clinical psychologist, and the story that led to that is very long and very typical, I will say, of most people in that field, which is, you know, kind of wanting to right wrongs or improve on things we've experienced. Suffice to say, I was very, very happy for many years as a clinical psychologist. I often tell the story that I would walk into work singing, literally singing. I would sit in sessions with my patients, and externally I looked very calm and poised, the way a psychologist is supposed to look. And internally, there would be this like giddy inner child just jumping up and down thinking, I cannot believe I get to do this. Unfortunately, there came a point in my life where there was a shift. And part of it is getting really good at doing something. Part of it is the reality of what any career is versus what you imagine it to be. Also changing life circumstances. I'd become a mother. The having children actually made me more ambitious, not less ambitious career-wise. And there came a day where I just stopped singing when I would walk into work. Actually, I got to this point where, and I shared this with my patients at the time, but I looked at them and I wanted to say, do something about it. Like, we've been talking about it, do something about it. And nobody wants their therapist in that state of mind, first of all. And I certainly didn't want to spend the next 30 years of my career frustrated at what I was doing. So like many, many professionals, certainly many of the women I work with even today, there came a point where I had to bridge the gap between what I thought I wanted to be and where I was as a human being. And that led me to coaching. It was the most natural progression. It utilized all the skills I absolutely loved utilizing, even as a psychologist, but in a different context, and certainly in a context where people are ready to do something about it. And executive coaching came as an offshoot of that. I was working with a lot of women, engineers, physicians, who were not just looking for new opportunities at different organizations. They were leaving their careers. They were so fed up, so burnt out. And I kept on thinking there has to be a way of catching this earlier because there's such a huge investment in getting there. And I started doing a lot of research in what it was like to be a woman in corporate America. I've worked for myself the vast majority of my career, so I've been my own boss. And I had this huge aha moment, this realization that all the data, all the stories that I heard that I thought I understood were really things I knew. And then I got it. I got how difficult it was to really succeed and succeed and thrive as a woman in the corporate space. And that's when I made the shift from, let's just say, general coaching to wanting to work as an executive coach very specifically and a coach with women very specifically.
That's tremendous. Thanks for sharing that. It's a wonderful progression. And like I said, you know, your mission is to help as many women as possible live and succeed on their terms so they can build a legacy they're proud of. And these approaches are based in science and human psychology and years of practical experience, which I think is extraordinary for anybody listening who's wanting to know the background and your understanding in these approaches. I think these just enhance that relationship that you have with your clients. Let's talk about that, the role of an executive coach. How do you define the role of an executive coach, and how do you make it your own? What is your role as an executive coach, and what are some of the things that you're working on with women?
I would say the role of an executive coach at a basic level is to work with individuals who are in senior leadership positions. So we're talking about, director and above, to help them perform and operate better, right? That is the most global definition, whether it's, and often it's about showing up better as a leader. So when I talk to most executive coaches, they're usually brought in by an organization. And they're most often tasked with helping a leader perform better as a leader within that organization. We do that. There's an element of that. Some of my clients come to me because somebody within their organization wants to sponsor them, wants to help advance them and show up better as a leader. A lot of the women I'm working with, so first of all, fit that definition, right? Director and above, senior VP in banking, managing director, some C-suite women. Where my work departs a little bit more is that I'm not just trying to help them perform better at work for their organization. we are really looking at who they are as human beings and how to help them excel in a manner that also supports life outside of work. And that's why I make that distinction about not just helping women be extremely successful, but this idea of wildly successful and deeply fulfilled, because I've seen, and all of my clients are incredibly successful. But a lot of them have gotten there on somebody else's terms. So meeting somebody else's dreams, somebody else's definition of what it means to be successful or what it means to be a leader, or they've done it and they've sacrificed so much that the cost of that success is not worth what they're getting from it.
That's really important to understand and really appreciate. Why do you work with women in STEM and finance? What is it about those particular areas that speak to you, Doctor?
So as I mentioned, when I first started coaching, I was working with a lot of women in STEM, and again, engineers, physicians, people who had invested an incredible amount of time in their education to get where they get. I serendipitously started having conversations with a number of women in finance and was shocked by the hours that these women were working. I was shocked by the number of degrees and certifications that they were accumulating. I remember speaking to one woman in London who was on her second or her third master's. She had no life. She was at home. She was alone. She'd lost her marriage. She had not had time to build friends in the 3 years she had moved to London. She was tearful on her call. But that accumulation of degrees was designed to help move her up to managing director level. She had just been stuck for such a long time. What I realize is in both cases, we have these highly educated women who are extremely driven. They are working ridiculously long hours. I often say they're working three times as hard for a fraction of the recognition. And the spaces might be different. Finance might feel very different from tech. I often joke that, it's three-piece suit versus hoodie. But the systems and the dynamics within those systems are very much the same. These are male-dominated spaces. There's nothing wrong with that. I love men, but I'm in a household full of men. I have two sons, a husband, the nanny's a man. It's not that. It's just that it's a system that wasn't created for women nor by women. And so they were drowning. The other reason these two spaces are really, really interesting to me is that they shape how we live. I mean, finance is power, right? The people at the top of the financial ladder are determining who gets investment dollars, what kind of policies and regulations are set up around banking and finance, and that controls the flow of money in the economy. And if we don't have proper representation, then we don't have people who are going to be able to think through all the possibilities. We need groups that where there's a diversity of thought that can really help us be better positioned in terms of finance and in terms of how we finance projects. And same thing for technology or medicine or engineering, right? So the way I see it is little old me, I just don't have the power to change the system from where I stand. But if I can help women step into the highest levels of leadership and in those positions, not just access a seat at the table, but have a voice, earned respect, have some kind of influence, then they can do the hard work. They can do the heavy lifting of modifying the system so that it works better for everybody, not just for women, for everybody.
That's right. All inclusive, everybody, all the way around, which I think is fantastic. It's a terrific approach. Why do you think women are still, even with advancements and forward movement, which is very positive, they're still underrepresented as leaders, particularly in the C-suite?
Mm-hmm. that you realize this, I know, that it's a multifactorial issue, right? So one, we start with what I mentioned earlier, which was the system has been set, and it's been set for years, and I don't think it's set by a bunch of maniacal people who are trying to hold on to power, but rather it's just established the way it is. And the system wasn't created by women, and so it's not designed to necessarily support or facilitate the way women work, the way women show up. There's human psychology in this. This is where being a psychologist is very useful, right? The way the human brain works, like attracts like. We are naturally drawn to individuals who resemble us. Even when we believe we're not biased, we tend to have that bias. So we're more naturally likely to hire, to promote, to elevate people who look like us. And the other piece of the bias that's there is just experience. We're used to seeing men in power. If I say CEO to you or anybody else, most of us picture a male in our head automatically. And then we need to make corrections. So those things, that part of human psychology really operates on who we're hiring and who we're bringing in and who we're promoting. The other piece has to do just with, on women's end, like what do we picture ourselves as being capable of doing? That's that whole idea of representation. And then I would say the third piece that plays into this has to do with, in my experience at least, with the way a lot of us are socialized. I spend an incredible amount of time working with women on building visibility, because visibility is the number one factor associated with advancement for women, period. But part of building visibility is being able to walk into a room, speak up, articulate what it is that you do well, talk about the impact you're able to make with that skill set, project into talking about the potential impact you could make with those skills. And that's very difficult for women. I've worked with women all around the world, and in every single culture, girls are socialized by very well-meaning parents to be humble. And as beautiful as humility is, it gets mistaken for self-effacement. So when I tell even extremely accomplished women to talk about the fact that they excel in a space, to talk about the accomplishments they've been able to achieve with that excellence, you can see the discomfort. And the other piece that makes it difficult is that although all of us love when celebrities walk in and say, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. We don't like when it's Jane Doe seated next to us in a cubicle who does that. And that is men and women alike. So there's a process to do it for women that allows us to step in and educate, because this is what it's about. Educate people about the ways in which we can best support a company's objectives, a team's needs, an individual's goals, without triggering that displeasure. We have to be able to do all of that in a manner where we're not walking in as women feeling very guilty or feeling like we're being boastful. Those things really, again, if visibility is the number one factor associated with advancement and women are struggling to make themselves visible, and all of us are struggling when women make themselves visible, that's another factor that's really going to hold us back.
That's really terrific, the way you just so eloquently and succinctly describe everything in relatable terms, which I think is, again, of great value for not only our listeners, but current clients and potential clients as well. Mm-hmm. How do you, from your perspective, and you talk a little bit about it, but how do you feel females differ from men as leaders?
We'll talk in sweeping generalizations for a minute, Jim.
Yeah.
I mean, there. First of all, let's start with their.
Well,
probably
I do say a lot of the wars
leaders.
That we have are usually the guys.
I think historically you are absolutely correct, and the numbers yeah. the numbers are there to substantiate
and...
that.
Yep, you know, I will say that.
I will start with there are more commonalities than there are dissimilarities. What I'm seeing and what we typically see with women, which is not to say that every woman is this way, is women tend to use more situational leadership, meaning we adapt how we show up to the context within which we are. Oftentimes what you see with men is they have a leadership style, and it's very consistent across spaces. We've all heard that women tend to be more collaborative. And in this case, what I mean about that is in coming to decisions and in trying to figure out solutions, they're more consensus driven than coming in and saying, this is the way we're going to do it because this is the right way. And there's a time and a place for both, by the way, right? You cannot be a consensus-driven leadership in time of extreme crisis. That doesn't work. You can't wait to make sure everybody agrees with you when a decision needs to be made imminently. Likewise, when you have the time to pull a whole group, being very decisive and not pulling the community might not make sense. Not building consensus might have a larger issue in the long run. I would say that those are probably really the biggest differences I see. And we see that translate in how women speak. Again, that we versus I, which is wonderful, but not always great. There is a body of research saying that when it comes to crisis, women tend to manage crisis slightly better. I haven't looked very deeply into that, so I can't comment about it that much. But again, if we're also speaking in broad generalizations, I think women tend to be a little bit more cautious. And so, you know, that risk aversion at times can create more stability.
I like that, yeah, as far as just laying out some of the subtle differences, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different answers to this question, but from your perspective, what are some of the things you think that distinguish you from perhaps other executive coaches out there? I think your illustrious background as a clinical psychologist by trade adds something extra. What else do you feel helps in having you stand out for your clients?
So I would agree. Probably one of the biggest distinguishing factors is my background as a psychologist. I actively practiced for 17 plus years. And so I'm always bringing that into every single conversation. What I found happened a lot with coaches is that they're very solution focused. So the way you might think of this translating is they start with what are your goals? And I never just start there. Being a psychologist, I understand, first of all, that sometimes we can have fabulous goals and that we might have all the knowledge and the resources and the skills we need to achieve those goals, which doesn't mean we'll get there. Anybody who's tried to lose weight understands this. And so I'm always also looking at what are the roadblocks, and not just external roadblocks, situational factors, but internally what is going on and how are we going to address that? Because I'm not working or operating as a therapist, the idea isn't always that we need to work through whatever's there, but we do need to come up with a plan that addresses those internal roadblocks so that my clients can act despite proverbial imposter syndrome, act despite insecurities. The other piece that I often bring is to make sure that there's alignment between who the person is at the time we're working together and what they're reaching for. So again, even if a client comes to me and says, I know exactly what I want to do this, I'm going to start with an alignment of saying, okay, but let's just make sure that that's what you actually want rather than being what you think you want or what somebody else says you should be doing for yourself. And then the other piece that I know distinguishes me and is also in part a function of my background as a psychologist, I would say in part just a function of the person I am, is my ability to build trust. And because of this, oftentimes we are able to overcome obstacles to get further, deeper, sooner. And I can get women to do things or try things that they do feel uncomfortable doing because it departs from their normal pattern or habit. It makes them anxious. But things I know and ultimately they know will work better for them. So we can get past all of that and get them into action sooner, faster. Articulating value is one of those examples, right, where I can overcome those, that discomfort with speaking about yourself. And what we see time and time again is when women can do that, at least the clients at Noteworthy that I work with, when I can get them to identify what they're wonderful at, what they love doing that they're best suited, when they understand the process for articulating that in a manner that's going to resonate with other people and be compelling and contextually appropriate, we get to position them for greater opportunities. I mean, I have a client who was working in the energy space who was running into problem after problem in the department she was working with, just the leadership. She was set up on what's called a glass cliff, so asked to take on a project that was doomed to fail, and her confidence was completely shaken. She lost sight of what she was really good at. She didn't know how to articulate it to her team, which means they couldn't understand really what she excelled at. When we got her to the place that she could do that, not only was she able to build better buy-in from her team, but when she left that organization, she positioned herself for a C-suite role, and she tripled her salary. And she's doing excellently at this point. She's a CFO in another energy company. She's doing wonderfully.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's powerful.
It's amazing. Yeah, it really is. It's incredible, and it's very inspiring for anybody else that's listening as well. You know, pick up on this a little bit more during the course of the next episode, but diversity and inclusion, critical to an exemplary workplace, wouldn't you say, Doctor?
I agree. I would agree. And I think anybody who understands how the human brain works would agree. It's when we can bring, you know, diversity without the inclusion piece doesn't work. So just if you've ever been to a party, if you've ever had a friend throw a party and bring four or five different groups of people together and not take the time to introduce those people and to help them understand each other, you know what diversity looks like. You'll have groups of people and they'll all move into their own circles and they won't interact. The inclusion piece is making sure that the framework is set up so that the different guests at the party can start having conversations and get to know each other and start feeling comfortable with each other. And that's when you see those great conversations build up around the table. That's when you see new friendships emerge. It's the same thing in a workplace. Right? It's bringing different people so you have different perspectives, creating a system where conversations can happen, people feel safe and included in the conversations and get to know each other, and then we bring in innovation. Then we have people who can have a debate around a dinner table without it breaking into arguments and people siloing themselves. Same thing in the workplace.
Very excited to have this conversation because I think it's one that is so important and essential. And if folks would like to learn more, again, this is just part one. Our very special guest, Dr. Alessandra Wall, will be back with us for part two, so I invite you to tune in for that as well. You can go to www.noteworthyinc.co, and note, of course, is N-O-T-E, and then the word worthy, W-O-R-T-H-Y, and then INC.co, to connect with our very special guest, Dr. Alessandra Wall. Again, her mission is to help as many women as possible live and succeed on their terms so they can build a legacy they're proud of. She loves what she does, and she's been doing it for a long time. She does it really well. Dr. Wall, thank you very much for joining us. It was a real pleasure and honor to chat with you here on this episode of Close Up Radio, and hope we get a chance to expand some more down the line as well. That would be a real pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jim. The pleasure was mine. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too as well, and a terrific holiday weekend. NoteworthyInc.co, Dr. Alessandra Wall of Noteworthy, our special guest. This is Jim Masters, your host, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time on Close Up Radio. Have a terrific day. Stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily with another incredible guest, celebrated from around the world, here on Close Up Radio just for you. For all of us, have a great day. Happy Passover, happy Easter, and we'll chat again soon, next time on Close Up Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.